If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
Strive for something that you don't think you can do. Go for a project that you really, really believe in, but is out of your comfort zone.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Donato Sitani has been a senior project manager for St. John's Terminal, a $2 billion redevelopment project in Manhattan's West Village neighborhood, and has worked on Hudson Yards, a $20 billion mega project on the far west side of Manhattan. He also spent 3 years with Macklow Properties as a project manager on 432 Park Avenue and was responsible for residential unit and amenity turnover and successfully managed the closings on over $1.5 billion in real estate. Notable other projects are the New York Yankee Stadium and Madison Square Garden renovations. He holds a master's degree in real estate development from New York University and a bachelor's degree in engineering from the University of Delaware.
So, Donato, hey, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's such an honor to have you on the show. You guys are doing huge things, and I'm just pumped to have you here today. So if we can just jump right in, and if you can tell me kind of where did you guys start? Where are you now? How did you get there? And where are you going?
Yeah, sure. We technically started at a bar in Manhattan about 3 years ago, I want to say. I was working in the institutional space, Manhattan real estate, and my partner Josh had just taken the leap out on his own. From there, we decided to form a company, and we did our first deal. It was a $1.1 million acquisition in my hometown in Westchester County. Shortly thereafter, we bought a $5.5 million deal, also in New York, which really proved out our strategy that, hey, we could do this, we could raise money. And that's when I left my full-time job to join Josh full-time, and off we went. From then on, we never bought something again in New York. Since I was full-time in the business, we were able to do a lot of research and traveling into the Southeast where we invest today.
Okay. So it sounds like you already had a background on the institutional side in real estate. So can you kind of walk us through how you got to that point? I mean, did you just come right out of school and go directly into real estate working for large institutions, or what did that look like? How did you get your experience, I guess, is the question.
Yeah, sure. So I graduated college in 06. I had an engineering background. I went into the construction industry in Manhattan. I quickly realized that I really wanted to be on the owner side of the business. I went back to school. I was actually going to NYU for a master's in real estate finance and development at night, and decided during the Great Recession, although I had a job and it was a great job, that I was going to take a little bit of a risk and quit. So I quit. I finished NYU program full time, but really, the reasoning behind that was I knew in my head, my heart, that if I had a full-time job, I just wouldn't have the fire in the belly to go find what I wanted to do. So that once I quit, I took a free internship, which is a story in itself, but that's how I broke into the owner side of the industry. I basically took a free job and I said, hey, I'm going to be going to school. If this works out, you guys will hire me. And the owner laughed. And I said, no, I'm very serious. I'll come in every working hour that I'm not in class. I will be at this office. He accepted. He said, sounds great. If I can have you for free, we'll see how it works out. And I finished school in December. And sure enough, in January, they gave me a full-time position. So that's really how I broke in. It's pretty difficult, especially during that time in around 2011, to break into the industry because, the industry had just crumbled and gone through major pain, especially in New York.
Right. Did you know this person previously, or did you just start flipping through the internet yellow book and saying, hey guys, I'm looking for a free job somewhere?
Yeah. So what I did was I did both, to be honest. I tried to get emails and mailing addresses of local CEOs, and I sent them letters, handwritten letters, hand signed letters. And then I came across this group, Madison Equities, which good high school friend of mine, his father knew one of the partners from it, 20, 30 years back, and had recently been talking to him. And basically they said, yeah, they don't have anyone, they don't have any jobs opening. They're in a whole lot of hurt right now, but go in and talk to them. They're good guys. So I turned that going to talk to them to, hey, I'm going to work here for free.
That's awesome. That's really putting your money where your mouth is. I guess in this case, the no money where your mouth is, say, hey, I'm going to come and work for you guys for free. What skill set did you bring to the table, if any, that you could say, hey guys, I'm worth even having, you know, because obviously just because someone's free doesn't mean that it's even a good use of their resources to kind of train you up to speed on their processes and what they're investing in. So what did you bring to the table that helped sell that other than free?
Yeah, exactly. That's a great question. So I did bring a skill set to the table. They were just restarting a stalled condo project that had stalled during the Great Recession. They had found a big investor that believed in the project. They really needed some, call it junior level project management help, but they couldn't afford to pay anyone, basically.
Sure.
So I brought my construction experience with me there, and they really put me to work in the field finishing that condo building. And as I was doing that, then I, you know, worked myself into the office more and showed them that, hey, I learned all this financial analysis stuff, I'll call it.
Sure.
At night school. So let me get involved in that as well.
That's awesome. You take a non-traditional path to scaling in real estate. I mean, obviously, you know, the traditional story is somebody starts with small single family and then decides that's too much work and then just keeps scaling up. For you, you kind of took a backdoor entrance right into the big leagues. So what are you guys, I know you said you guys have done, you know, the millions of dollars that you've done in projects, but what is the asset class you're investing in now?
So we are focused on multifamily assets, value add, mostly in the Southeast. Really, we're in North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia right now.
Gotcha. And what would you say are some of the key lessons, I guess, from, you know, learning, you know, from your previous job? I think it was Madison. What was the name of that company? Madison?
Madison Equities.
Right. So the things you learned from them, like what are some key lessons along the way that you said finally gave you the courage to just step out and say, hey, look, we're going big and we're doing this on our own?
I saw with Madison Equities that, you know, it was a family office, and in order to stay alive, they had to take risks, right? And I saw that the risks that they were taking on a small project versus a larger project were basically the same. You know, there's the same human capital needed, and there's the same research and execution needed. It's just on a different scale. So when Josh and I teamed up, we really came to the conclusion that said, hey, we'll start with smaller deals, but we really need to scale this thing pretty quickly because we already have the skill sets to do it. And just time, you know, our time and our intellectual, call it horsepower, would be the same used on a smaller deal versus a larger deal.
Right. And then also your returns obviously are larger on the larger deals as well. So it kind of makes it worth going bigger. Was there any bad advice or things, some missteps that you took along the way?
I would say that consistently we heard, and we still hear to this day, you know, go with the smaller deals, you know, do it smaller. It's different. You know, don't take so much risk. And you hear it back and forth all the time. But we wholeheartedly don't believe that. We believe, especially in the multifamily space where we get scale, you know, it's a much safer investment for us, a stabilized 100 to 200 unit building than a 15 unit building or even a 10. You know, we know a bunch of people that invest in, you know, six families. Mm-hmm. If one out of six families isn't paying you, you're in a whole lot of hurt. You're, you know, down into the 80s on collections. If one out of 100 doesn't pay you, nothing's going to happen.
Right. Yeah. As a percentage of your total gross income, that changes dramatically. How are you able to fund your opportunities? Did you just come from a lot of money, or did you happen to just have a right pool of investors, or how did that work out for you?
So no, we don't come from a lot of money by any means. My parents are very hardworking and gave us everything they possibly can and are successful. Don't get me wrong, but they're not funding this operation whatsoever.
Sure.
What we found is our friends and family network was strong. And through my time working in Manhattan real estate, I gained a lot of, you know, colleagues that were willing to, you know, understand investment, understand what's going on in the Southeast, and were willing to invest in us. It's really investing in us more than the properties at this point.
Sure.
And then the same with Josh. And I think we've done a good job of, you know, if someone calls us with a question, we answer the phone. If someone wants to go through a spreadsheet with us, we get on Zoom, you know, during these times at least, and we go through the questions, and if we don't know the answers, we say we don't know them, and we follow up, and we get those people the answers. So it's just building that trust through friends and family, and now it's to the point where those friends and those family, which was maybe, you know, our initial, call it 75 investors, have now spread, and we're getting those friends and those family. So now we're well over 100 individual investors on our projects.
Right. That's fantastic. And I mean, 100 investors can go a long way, you know, when you're raising money. So what are the key financial strategies that you've used along the way? You know, are you like living frugally? Obviously, you're raising money from friends and family. Is there other things that as you were scaling up, you said, hey, you know, this is the way we're going to approach this?
That's definitely something that as I especially took the leap from my job in Manhattan, we had to think about. I'd been making very good money as a senior project manager for a $50 billion real estate fund in Manhattan. And I had a conversation with my wife that life was going to change, and it was going to change pretty dramatically, pretty quickly. So most of all, I had to get her on board. And she basically told me one night, hey, if this is the path you think is best for us, let's do it. And I'm with you 100%. But there was, you know, there's a big change. Investing in multifamily is not a get rich quick scheme.
Sure.
You know, the investments we're making today, when they're successful, we'll see those returns, you know, 5-6 years from now, just the way that all these partnerships are structured. It's very back end structured for us, the sponsor. So in the meantime, we have to live frugally. So what I had done was I'd saved my bonuses for 2 years. I, you know, tried not to go do an addition on my house or, you know, go to Europe like all the friends were doing. And we basically just banked those. And for the past 2 years, you know, we've been not only are you surviving by, you know, being frugal, but now you're investing all that money that you've saved up all your life because you have to put your money where your mouth is.
Right.
So we're investing all of our savings into these deals, which I think going back to the last question is another way that people gain trust. They see that we invest heavily into our business and into our deals. And, you know, people see the way that we live, and we live frugally. And we're not out spending proceeds. We're taking acquisition fees and we're dumping them into the deal.
That's awesome. I mean, that takes an incredible amount of discipline out of the gate. So kudos to you for doing that. We are coming short up on time. So I want to kind of get, and it's been awesome interviewing you. So thanks for being here today. I guess I did have one other question for you. Before we get to that, can you define the role differences between you and your partner? Like what side of the business do you handle? What side of the business does he handle? And how did you guys define those?
I guess when we first started out, we were both doing everything. And we really wanted to naturally let it fall out, number one. And then number two, we really wanted to understand how the other thinks so that as it naturally fell out, we understood the decision-making process that each other would have been going through to make those decisions and come to a conclusion.
Sure.
So now we're at the point where my partner, Josh, he handles acquisitions and financing 100%. And I'm the assist on that. I handle asset management and renovations, and he's the assist on that. So we've kind of split it up that way. It allows us to be nimble, but we talk enough every day that should something happen, I could get on that, you know, lender call and just step right in or vice versa. On the renovations, he could step right in, but that's generally how we try to divide it up.
Are you guys self-managing your assets right now?
No, we had two that we were self-managing. Now we have one that we're self-managing, but it's just circumstantial. We like using large third-party managers because we just don't have enough scale in the places we're investing in.
Gotcha. I was going to say, if you're self-managing and it's a two-person, maybe three-person team, then you must be really efficient if that's the case. Okay, on to the final four, investing in bigger assets. If you were to distill everything that you know and can only give one piece of advice to an aspiring investor, what would you tell them?
Strive for something that you don't think you can do. Go for a project that you really, really believe in, but is out of your comfort zone.
That's awesome. Investing in yourself, what's one thing you do to stay on top of your game?
Read. I always have a list of books on the front page of my phone. It's not a to-do list. It's a list of books that I need to read. And those are from, you know, podcast friends and family that are, you know, keying me in on new stuff.
Sure. That's awesome. Investing in the world. What's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
So my family actually runs a charity called Special Kids of New York, specialkidsofnewyork.org. I'm going to plug myself here.
Please.
My parents started it about 25 years ago now. I'm a board member. My wife's a board member. And we do everything we can to give back to children in New York.
That's awesome. What is the focus of Special Kids? Since we're talking about it, I'd love to hear more.
For anyone under the age of 18 in New York State that needs assistance, and most of that assistance that we give comes in form of medical bills or medical equipment that is not covered by insurance, in which case parents can't help. But we also do things like Christmas present drives, where we go to local children's hospitals and we literally buy presents for, you know, all the children. We buy clothes for them and things of that nature. So it's not just medical equipment. We're willing to help in any way possible.
Wow, that sounds super rewarding. Lastly, how can people learn more about you and get in touch with you?
We love speaking to new people, www.dxzproperties.com. Both of our contact info is literally on our website, and we're constantly, you know, connecting with new people, speaking with new people. In fact, I've had a bunch of people over the last couple of years that just want advice on certain things, and we've done that too, because, you know, you got to give back.
That's awesome. Donato, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure interviewing you, and look forward to connecting here in the future.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.